Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
You're about to listen to Graeme's review of today's El Clásico Real Madrid v Barcelona at the Bernabeu. This episode is free. If you'd like to access our entire archive of exclusive shows, it's time to become a socio. Head to patreon.com/GraemeHunter, where you can instantly access 5 exclusive big interviews, plus December's mini-documentary on Gareth Bale. Okay, welcome to another big inside view. This is the classical debrief. The whistle has just blown on a quite fascinating game at the Bernabeu, Real Madrid 0, Barca 3. It would have been hard to predict the scoreline at half time, I guess. It was such a interesting tactical battle, but the way the game developed really kind of turned sour for Zinedine Zidane and the way he attempted to set his team up today.
Well, I'm not only an honest man, Martin, I'm not a vengeful man. So, first of all, let's let Graeme take his licks. I had imagined that Barca's improvement in form in recent weeks might not be enough, because I genuinely think that when Real Madrid are at their peak and when they're on full form, it's my opinion that they're a match for anybody. And I think there's a really good reason that they're, you know, Spanish and European and world champions. So the fact that Barcelona have gone to the Bernabeu and given Real Madrid a right good spanking, if anybody wants to have a little jab at me, then that's fair enough. I think that's taking your licks. Secondly, I'm sending the bill to Zidane. And while your proposition is right that, you know, there was a 45-minute spell where it was never dry, because we saw intelligent play, we saw two sets of very technically able players who'd been very well briefed about what they were supposed to do, and we saw at least, you know, one glaring miss, two very good saves, and the first 45 minutes was what you and Neil often called setting the table. I think it's a reasonable phrase. And frankly, I because I'd, you know, seen so many of the Clásicos, I wasn't in any way unclear that we could have drama in the second half. But what I was sure about at halftime was that the idea that Zidane had come up with wasn't right, wasn't working, and that for my money at halftime, not now retrospectively at the end of the game, was that there was time for a change. Not just of personnel, but in his ideology. And I think it's turned out to be a really bad day at BlackRock for Zidane. While I've been describing him during his time, what people have been telling me around the club and around the training ground is that the thing he did to transform a side that was beaten 4-0 in this fixture at the Bernabeu just immediately before he took over a couple of years ago, his transformation was about reinstalling enjoyment and contentment and happiness, round pegs and round holes, square pegs and square holes at the training ground, day in, day out. He didn't introduce a massive strategic overhaul. He actually said in public, my philosophy is that we'll always play front foot. My philosophy is that we'll always be daring. We'll always be attacking. We'll always be beautiful to watch. And while this wasn't his phrase about playground football or we'll score more than you, by and large, Martin, that's what it's been. So to look at this today, where Zidane, first of all, has decided that it's, you know, it wasn't right for him to start Bale. That's something I can understand. Bale's game time, his training time, has not been spectacular enough to say start a Clásico, give us 70 minutes, don't break down. Brutally, I think that his idea of saying to Bale, come on and win this thing, although it hasn't worked, was probably the right idea. Where I, you know, completely fail to understand his concept was that in trying to choke the midfield, in trying to man-mark Messi, in relegating Isco, who I've heard nothing to indicate that Isco wasn't well or couldn't play, you know, he makes the bench. Isco had to start. Isco had to be the guy who broke tackles, who dragged Bus on into positions they didn't want to be. And you can take a risk and you can say, what we'll do is we'll pair Kovacic and Casemiro, we'll block the centre of the pitch, which is where Leo Messi has been doing so much of his damage. We'll clog that area. We'll try and dog Messi around the pitch so that he never gets easy possession. And we'll allow Casemiro, who is a far better footballer than the descriptions of him as a kind of midfield policing street thug. He's a far better footballer than that. We'll allow him the opportunity to drift forward and maybe pin back Piqué to test Busquets and drag him with Casemiro. Conceptually, you go like, okay, I can see that. But when, by halftime, Kovacic is struggling a little bit and looking as if the pace of this, you know, first start in the league this season was too much, when Barcelona are looking comfortable, and when the crowd are not being inspired, it's a lunchtime kickoff near to Christmas. One of your weapons at the Bernabeu is that it is, although the stats with Barcelona suggest otherwise, it can be an intimidating place. It can be a 12th man. At halftime, that wasn't the case. They were booing the instant that Cristiano Ronaldo miskicked that left-footed chance right at the beginning of the game, which if he'd scored would have changed the complexion of things pretty dramatically in terms of confidence for Real Madrid. Whistling Benzema on the number of times when he was set up into open positions, i.e. he's still doing, Martin, the things that makes Karim Benzema special, but then not converting the openings, not making the passes. So the crowd was whistling, and in all honesty, Barcelona were looking relatively comfortable. It was an exchange of chances either way. But if you looked with a microscope at the way the tactic was operating, it began to seem to me to be halftime Bale, halftime Isco, certainly not no change, halftime Asensio. And if you want to just take a step back from the actual game, I've been, I was very critical of Florentino Perez in his who's the sports director? Well, it's me, which is what he openly says to people. I don't think that the president should be the sports director. They sign well because over a number of years now, they've allowed Zidane, even before he was coach, even before he was Carlo Ancelotti's assistant, to make a lot of the signing decisions. That's now not something that he can be doing as the first team manager, coach. But I don't want to be hypocritical, because in the summer, it impressed me that they were willing to trust Vallejo, that they were willing to invest time and money in recuperating Llorente instead of maybe selling him or letting him go another year on loan, that they were willing to invest money in Ceballos, Borja. Well, okay, fine. But when it came to the crunch, I don't expect any of them to be running the team by now. That's wrong. But if you look at the equilibrium of the sales of James, the letting go of Pepe, the sale of Morata, the failure to get Mbappe, and a failure to get a replacement for Mbappe, and then you look at the green shoots, and you see that Vallejo didn't make the bench, Llorente didn't make the bench, Ceballos didn't make the bench, somebody who has made a real impact this season whenever he's played, has looked far more ready than Vallejo or indeed Llorente. Borja doesn't make the bench. You begin to say, well, by midway through this season, these green shoots don't have to be running the team. They don't even have to be dominating the bench. But the fact that none of those guys even make the bench, and players who, frankly, what I'm saying is that if you, for some bizarre reason, if Zidane has fallen out with Isco. A couple of weeks ago, 2-3 weeks ago, Isco looked a little bit leggy. I'll give you that. But recently, no. the fact that none of them were available to add anything to this particular match at a crucial time of the season doesn't look particularly good. And I think, Martin, truthfully, there was, and it's not Monday morning quarterback after a defeat, at halftime it looked searingly obvious that the idea needed freshening up, probably changing, and that Barcelona in midfield needed to be tested by being pushed back rather than contained at home by the Spanish, European and world champions opting to contain at home. And I'll close by saying there is a phenomenon going on here which affects Real Madrid far more than Barcelona. If I'm not wrong, I think Barcelona have won something like two of the last five Clásicos at home. Madrid have lost, I think, five out of the last seven at home. Each of these two teams is far more comfortable playing cagely, playing a little bit of rope-a-dope away from home where their fans are not putting pressure on them, and then going, bang, now we'll do what we know we can do. Now we'll punish, we'll reach for the gaps, we'll accelerate. And this is becoming a fixture where, although the stats aren't exactly even, you know, Barcelona do slightly better at home than Real Madrid have been doing at home than Barcelona, it's becoming a fixture which is easier to win away from home, which for generations, going back into the history of this fixture, wasn't the case.
I mean, we're going to segue into talking a bit more about that midfield battle, but, you know, the point you make about Kovacic is interesting. I thought it was quite obvious even before half-time that he was labouring physically. To not make that change at half-time, and then the first goal comes, I think, is about the 54th minute. And if anyone watches that goal back, you can see Kovacic almost giving up on chasing Rakitic. Yeah. He looks absolutely ghost at that stage. Now, I appreciate he's marshalling Messi behind him and he's trying to keep an eye on that situation, but when a guy is running straight through the middle of the pitch directly at your goal, you have to take some level of responsibility. The guy just looked knackered.
For anybody who hasn't watched the goal, let's back up a little bit and say that, you know, what happens is that there's a lovely interception of the ball by Sergio Roberto, and at a stage where Busquets then, with Cruz right on his back, Busquets shows sang-froid, holds the ball, shuffles, turns, draws Cruz in. And what happens initially is that Modric goes to sleep. Okay, Casemiro is the one who's made the run. That I don't want to see Casemiro criticised for that, because the inclusion of Kovacic in the team was that Casemiro should be allowed to make that run. So the responsibility at that stage lies on the fact that the two Croats are available to pick up, to mark, to tactically foul if necessary. You know, they can staunch the flow, but they don't, because number one, Busquets is released and Rakitic's move is really good, and Modric fails first. Modric doesn't react, doesn't anticipate what Rakitic is going to do, and then doesn't react quickly enough. At which stage, when Rakitic is, and this is point two, let's segue out of this into Rakitic. At that stage, I buy your argument completely that it was really clear that Kovacic, you know, was pecking, it's a very Scottish word. He was struggling a little bit, blowing out of his backside. But I think tiredness, you know, the listeners know that tiredness doesn't just affect your physical application or your athleticism. It affects your decision-making. And this is only a reading. I don't claim this is fact. And maybe you're right, he just couldn't. What it looked to me like, Kovacic, tired as he was, knackered as I think he was, made a bad decision. You see him checking over his shoulder and saying, oh, my job's Messi. Where is Messi? And he kind of gravitates a little bit into Messi's space, thus making a fundamentally wrong decision, I think, in that we know that Rakitic's movement goes on then to create the goal. And that the idea had to be that instead of allowing Rakitic to find the ball right to Sergio Roberto, who's run up, who's supported, and who gives an assist pass of a similar quality to last weekend against Deportivo La Coruña, when he receives from Alex Vidal, centres from the right, and Suarez scores. This time he's far closer in. He bisects the defenders. It's a really beautiful pass. Suarez finishes first time. But at the point at which Kovacic decides, I'll stick with my man, if he goes in and closes Rakitic, and Rakitic then slips it off his right foot to the free Messi, maybe Kovacic is damned if he does, damned if he doesn't. But what I saw was a guy going, I know what Messi does. He kind of ghosts along, you go to the ball, and then Messi gets it and you look stupid. And maybe he had no good option in that situation. But certainly, number one, Kroos not closing down Busquets or being able to, and Modric going to sleep. I thought they were the absolute key points at which a tiring player either, in your words, couldn't keep up or, in my view, made a tired decision, just mentally computed badly. But let's move into point two, because you talked about the, you know, the midfield. I thought that at the beginning, what you could, if you wanted to try and justify Zidane's ideal, which looked a little bit defensive, which looked a little bit conservative at home for a talented team that could have got at Barcelona a good deal more. But if you wanted to justify it, I think Kovacic not only trying to smother Messi and go with him and make life difficult for him. Rakitic played in the middle because Sergio Roberto pushed up from right midfield. And in recent weeks, any scout for Real Madrid will have seen two games, a European game at home to Sporting Lisbon, where Busquets is rested and Rakitic plays in the middle, and he's very, very good. He plays as pivote, and to be quite honest, Martin, gives probably his performance of the season. He does, he mimics Busquets exactly. And other clubs must find it unfair that when Busquets is such a brilliant computer in the middle of the park, an organiser, a tempo setter, superbly experienced, and somebody who'll just give release passes into space for the runners that can open up tight marking schemes. When he's out, other clubs must find it unfair that Rakitic, who's had a moderate time over the last couple of seasons, asked to run up and down to cover gaps such that his creative abilities haven't been as powerful as in his initial seasons. He steps into the pivot position and he's exceptional, absolutely exceptional. Did it against Deportivo La Coruña last week when Busquets was rested to avoid a fifth yellow card. And lo and behold, Busquets has had an influential game, a better second half than first half, it has to be said. He was one of the ones that in the first half managed adequately but looked crowded. Maybe he was just figuring the game out, waiting for others to tire. At any rate, resting Busquets last week, playing Rakitic in the middle for the second time in a couple of weeks worked and clearly made Zidane believe it will be useful to crowd that midfield area because Rakitic and Busquets will play tightly together and Roberto will move up from right back to fill Rakitic's nominal right midfield slot. So you can begin to unpack Zidane's idea. And in football, your strategy, I suppose, I mean, shoot me down now, Socios or Martin, you might argue your strategy can be outright wrong from the beginning. There has to be an argument that strategy is only right or wrong based on what results it gets, and it might have been that at the outset that if they'd weathered the first half and that Kovacic had done his job and Zidane had made the right changes, probably two of which were screaming out. One was Bale for Benzema and the other one was probably Kovacic off, and either they score Asensio on. I think at halftime that probably gives us a different scoreline, whether a different result or not, certainly a different second half performance from Real Madrid. But Rakitic, I think, was one of the extra impetuses beyond simply man-marking Messi for Kovacic to get his place at the beginning. And it didn't work. And the most damning thing, you and I both agree, is that Zidane should have read that it wasn't working at a far earlier stage.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I mean, I think we're both signed up to the Sergio Roberto Appreciation Society, and I think if you're going to play that type of system with Rakitic a bit more central, then Sergio Roberto becomes an even more important player because he does give you that creative outlet on the right-hand side. And I thought he had a fantastic game. I just love watching him move. I love watching him play. You can tell he just understands the game so well, and you know, played a crucial part in the first goal. I mean, I just thought he actually intercepts the Cruz pass initially, and then he's up the other end 30 seconds later to play an incredible square ball.
No, it's right what you're saying. You know, there's at times like this, your memories kick in, and there's a certain romanticism because not only was I at his Champions League debut at this stadium in 2011, he comes on. Partly as a time-wasting idea in the Champions League semi-final of 2011. He's very young. He's never trained with the first team. He's on the bench. He thinks to make up numbers. You know, I interviewed him recently. He talked about being literally shy to mix with Busquets and Messi and Xavi. He talked to me about being out in the touchline and literally doing a James Finlayson, Laurent Hardy double take with the eyes bulging when Pep Guardiola points to him or tells an assistant to point to him, and he gets called to go on and play in the Champions League semi-final, having never spent time training or working out with the first team. And therefore, to see him back at a stadium that he ripped apart last April with that lung-busting run, again released by Busquets back in April from the corner flag, and he runs three quarters of the pitch and sets up Gomez, who sets up Alba, and Messi scores his 500th goal. To see him doing that again, and the intelligence of his support run for the goal. But I really like, you know, what you say, that he occupies space, he times his positioning, he has a technical touch. He's a very skilled player, and I've used the phrase again, but I think it's so adequate that when Luis Enrique began to justify Sergio Roberto's, you know, inclusion in the team during Lucho's reign, he talked about football intelligence. And your eye is telling you what Luis Enrique judged was a reason not to let Sergio Roberto go. And it is a little bit odd in retrospect that, maybe not gigantically odd, that a young Sergio Roberto didn't get a massive amount of time in Pep Guardiola's last and rather difficult, torrid last season, when players like, for example, Teo and Cuenca began to get slightly more opportunities. What is strange is that during the Tito Villanova and Tata Martino eras, Roberto was very much regarded as a fringe player. There were Catalan writers and fans who were like, okay, you know, close but no cigar, fella. You've been trained in La Masia, you can see your Canterano ideas, but you're not going to make it. But as the demands upon him have increased, as his game time has increased, he's become a model for the question marks that need to be over the current Football Barça youth system at Football Club Barcelona and the players who get pushed out. Are they de facto not good enough, or are they de facto good enough and intelligent enough and well-trained enough, but not given enough first-team time? And I think that's a really fundamental question. Everybody understands it at their own club. You see players going and succeeding at other sides when, for one reason or other, personality clash, timing, desperation. I know that Barcelona fans think like this about Grimaldo, who's playing in Portugal at the moment at full-back and stood out in La Masia as somebody who should have played the larger part of his life at the Camp Nou in the first team. He didn't. He got pushed out. And Sergio Roberto is the model whereby if there's a review under this current board, or when there's a new board, when the sports director begins to have a trickle-down effect into La Masia, Sergio Roberto is the absolute key. And you look at him and you go, give promising players more time. And the likelihood is, if they've been well-trained, they will reward you.
I mean, I think another key component to winning these games is keeping all your players on the park. And again, we're looking at, I think, the third red card in four Clásicos for Real Madrid. I mean, that's something that they really have to address going forward, surely.
The red cards are Sergio Ramos last April, when he simply loses any degree of control over his you know, Bruce Lee fantasies, and tries to kung fu kick Leo Messi just out of pure frustration. And then there's a Sergio Ramos style hole into which Barcelona punched that last run via Roberto Gomez and Alba, and Messi's free to shoot at the edge of the box and score the winner in his 500th goal. You know, Real Madrid didn't lose because of the next red card, which is Ronaldo's, which was hugely unfair, but it is another red card at the Camp Nou, Super Cup first leg. Top off to celebrate the goal, booking, falsely accused of a dive under Umtiti's tackle. Second booking, sent off, pushes the referee. They win that nonetheless, score a third goal when Ronaldo's off the pitch. But today, you know, it's very clumsy the way that they allow the goal to happen. And there's a judgment moment when, again, it's Busquets, whose contribution might be eclipsed a little bit by Sergio Roberto, by the controversy over certain refereeing decisions, by the fact that, you know, Suarez has done well, Messi scored again. All these things, that it's 3-0, may obscure the fact that Busquets in the second half has had a stellar performance. And it's his rob of the ball where he gets back, nicks it off Casemiro. Piqué does something that Pep Guardiola would hug and kiss him for. It looks to the naked eye an incredible risk at 1-0 up, in a Clásico, that if you win, you've tied up the league, because I think they have. And your centre-half leaves behind an undercooked centre-half in Vermaelen, who hasn't had a lot of game time, has played well recently, doesn't have tremendous pace, is booked already, doesn't want to be caught out on his own if Real Madrid win this ball and break back. Piqué's rushing forward, but this was the Guardiola doctrine. Although Piqué's had this in his genes, when his trainer at the youth team level, same trainer who's now at Manchester City at the Rodolfo Borrell at the academy, Cesc, Messi and Piqué were playing together, and Borrell's expression was, "Ah, look, Piqué's put his knapsack and he's going for a little wander again," as Jerry would run up the pitch and try to score. And you know, he still takes my jokes about him thinking he's a born goal scorer. And I think Piqué's gone up the pitch with the thought of a goal in his mind. But what he's done is he's broken the lines. He's added an extra player. He's given superiority of numbers. It's 3v2 in the midfield. And the three are Piqué, Paulinho and Messi. And the two are out of position. And when Piqué cedes the ball to Leo Messi, he keeps running. Now, that's the point at which he's done the initial part of breaking the lines, giving superiority of numbers in the midfield. When Messi picks up the ball just inside the semicircle of the halfway line, Piqué continues his run, commits Varane. That exposes the fact that Carvajal has not followed his man. And Messi's ball is brilliant by anybody's standards. By Messi's standards, it might be, out for a Sunday drive, look at the nice countryside, but it's still a brilliant pass. The ball hits the post. There's the 26th time that the ball's hit the post for Barcelona this season? And when it comes back out, Messi's there again, refeeds Suarez. The ball comes in, is blocked, and Paulinho will hit it towards goal. Carvajal dives, saves. And I have no criticism of the referee, but it's clearly the case that the whistle goes, we could hear it, the whistle goes as the ball crosses the line. So it's the referee's choice. If he's on his game, he probably lets the goal stand without it being a penalty, and there's no red card. But it's a deliberate, the change in the rules about the red card situation in the penalty box is that it is still a red card for a deliberate handball. So he's right to say that's a red card offence, and it's in his own either wit or judgment about whether he's quick enough to see the ball's gone in, I don't have to make a decision here. Or if he says, I'd whistled, it had to be a red and a penalty because I'd called it before the ball crossed the line. I don't think it did. I think that then probably ensured that that the game wasn't going to go Real Madrid's way. 10 men and 2-0 down. The referee will get a looking at in the Madrid newspapers because the ball does go out of play for the third goal. Now, that means it's the assistant referee. It's the lino's fault. He should have seen it. The ball did go out of play, in my view, before Messi brings it back in. And says to Marcel, I'm quicker than you. Ronaldo doesn't get to the front of the six-yard box quick enough to block or do anything useful. And the cutback falls to Vidal, who's been, you know, an outstanding disappointment at Football Club Barcelona compared to the football that we witnessed at Sevilla. But that's him helping make a goal last week, coming on in the Clásico as a Catalan and scoring the third goal. So, discipline, yeah, I agree with you. And I don't have an easy way to explain it because each of the incidents, those three red cards and four Clásicos, have been different. But going forward from this, I think it's an issue that Zidane had clearly spoken to Casemiro when Suarez tries to provoke Casemiro into a booking offence just on the edge of the pitch in the first half. You see Casemiro, as he gets up, his fist is curled like he's a proper street fighter, and that right hand is in a fist, and he calms down, and as he's pushed and tormented by the players around him, he's like, I want no part of this. They knew that the idea was stay on the fucking pitch. It's just that for one reason or another, again, they couldn't.
Graham, we can't have a classical debrief without specifically focusing on Messi, who produced several moments in that second half. Obviously his work in the lead up to the second goal, finishes emphatically from the penalty spot, by the way. It didn't seem like there was any doubt that that was going to hit the back of the net.
After last week, exactly so. It reminded you of that Clásico, the 4-3 Clásico, where he's asked to score two penalties, and that penalty was a thing of beauty because it was like, you know, it was like UPS dispatched to its destination, wasn't it? Which is it's the top corner. I never use the phrase I've run out of things to say about Leo Messi because I haven't. What I do think is that there are a lot of words that have been used to describe Cristiano Ronaldo's very clever reinvention of himself. When he began to realise that either because of what his hunger told him he wanted to do or because of a change in his athleticism, that idea about racing 60 metres and beating, dribbling past three or four players three or four times a game, two or three times a week. There was a stage a couple of seasons ago when he realised, no, I'm a finisher, I'm a striker. Supply me and I'll score you goals. If I score you goals, we'll win trophies. I think when you look at him sitting as European champion with Portugal, European champion with Real Madrid, Spanish champion and world champion, and you look at his contribution to the majority of the big moments in that run, you just salute him. But probably a little bit less is made of Messi's reinvention. Xavi was the one who said, well, when I retire, Messi will do my job. That was the first time I heard that idea that Messi might want to drop deep. And at the time, it seemed ludicrous because he'd hated playing on the wing as a kid. He'd then been moved in by Guardiola to this false nine, and it exploded his career, his achievements, Barcelona's era, a false nine connecting with the golden era of Xavi and Iniesta made it extra fertile. And had they all been of the same age, had Xavi and Iniesta been the same age as Messi, Barcelona would probably still be dominating the world. It's to every other club's great good fortune that Xavi and Iniesta got a little bit old. The thing I'm getting to is that Messi's ability to play in midfield doesn't mean that he would necessarily have the appetite or the patience to be the guy who's supplying the passes. And I know in a lot of the games against lesser opposition, his idea of a forward pass, particularly left to Suarez or left to Alba, is to receive the return and score at the edge of the box. Fine, okay. But when you look at his ability to create today, principally for the second and third goals, it's a reminder that you need a different mindset. When you are a record goal scorer, when you score, well, it's now what, 526 or 27 all in for Football Club Barcelona, but he's fallen, I don't know, 15 or 16 goals behind Cristiano Ronaldo, with whom he was neck and neck in the Champions League all-time scorers. it has to bug him a little bit. And last week against Deportivo La Coruña, was at that game too. And you saw in the last 15 minutes, he was really frustrated after missing the penalty that he desperately wanted a goal. So today what we saw was technique, we saw patience, we saw brilliance. He was part of the way Barcelona opened up the game. But I admire him in the way that he's reinvented himself, because I imagine there must be times, even when you win and when the team knows they owe the points to you and you're closer towards a trophy, if you're Leo Messi, I'm absolutely sure there must be moments where he goes, God, that used to be me scoring. Not today, but I'd say it's at least a 6 out of 10 performance, Martin. No, it's, all right, sorry. I'll turn that 6 upside down. Maybe it's a 9 out of 10.
There you go. That's better. Graham, thanks very much for your time. I think it's now time for you to head to the promised land in the northeast of Scotland. You've got a plane to catch. We'll let you go. I just want to thank everyone for listening this year. This is the last Big Inside View of 2017. And we'll be back in the new year with more fun.
Happy Christmas, everybody. Thanks for being there.
Next month's SocioBig interviews with Roberto Di Matteo. Sign up now and that full episode will drop into your app on January the 1st. Plus, you'll get all our archive shows, including 5 exclusive big interviews, plus this month's first special mini-documentary on Gareth Bale. Head to patreon.com/Graham Hunter.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.